Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 27, 2015. Lawmakers take a critical look at President Kiir's plans to distribute tractors to farmers.
The tractor is never a solution by itself, particularly in vegetated area like the Green Belt. Why there's adequate rain? If you don't do land clearance, your tractor will be as useless to you.
And European Union pledges millions of dollars to help people affected by the crisis in South Sudan.
The humanitarian situation is getting worse day by day, and the only way out is a political solution to the crisis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Lawmakers in Juba are questioning whether President Salva Kiir's plan to provide farmers around the country with tractors is a good one. Mr. Kiir announced in a speech to Open Parliament last week that his government bought 1,000 tractors and they will be distributed to farmers to try to improve crop production and end food insecurity. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Many of the lawmakers who attended a special session to analyze the speech Mr. Kiir made last week say they are doubtful that the tractors will help to solve the food crisis in South Sudan. Pascal Bandindi represents Western Equatoria in the National Assembly. He knows a thing or two about farming and tractors.
The tractor is never a solution by itself, particularly in vegetated area like the Green Belt. Why there's adequate rain? If you don't do land clearance, your tractor will be as useless to you because you cannot cultivate more than 2 feather. You must clear the land, and therefore you prepare this land for the tractor to move.
Bandindi says the government needs to address issues like land clearance before it distributes the tractors to the farmers. Betty Achan represents Eastern Equatoria in the Assembly. The Equatoria region is considered South Sudan's farming belt. Achan, who once served as a national agriculture minister, says if the tractors are to be of any use, they must be given to farmers who know how to use them.
There are certain places that are really ready for tractors, like the Upper Nile, and they can produce enough for South Sudan if we can only give them access to the market, that they can transport what they have to the market.
Operating a tractor requires some technological know-how, Achan says. But given the lack of education among South Sudanese, few have that knowledge. Achan says Mr. Kiir should have purchased tools most farmers already know how to operate.
What about the ox plow, which the ministry already put in their policy? There are areas that ox plows would do much better than tractors, and this needs to be highlighted and strengthened, and the president should be encouraged. While he also brings tractors, he also should bring ox plows and donate to areas that tractors cannot be used.
Gotch Makwach is a lawmaker from Warap State. He says buying and distributing hundreds of tractors is not enough to help boost farm output. He says the government also needs to improve infrastructure.
To produce is one thing, and to take the produce to for where they can be consumed is also another thing. I thought in the recommendation of the committee, they should have talked or they should have asked the government to embark on the construction of the road. Because if we don't have roads in the country, even these produce, we cannot transport them from a place to a place.
The government has not said how much the 1,000 tractors cost, but one local radio station estimates that the deal's price tack at between $38 and $50 million. Kiir said in a speech last week to Open Parliament that he is confident the tractors will help to boost the food production in the country. But parliamentary opposition leader Onyote Adigo disagrees. He says South Sudan is facing a major crisis and the government is doing too little to deal with it.
The price of essential commodities in the market are skyrocketing all over the country and the government is not doing anything.
Most of the food consumed in South Sudan is imported and paid for in U.S. dollars. but the country's currency has depreciated sharply against the dollar in recent months, and many traders can no longer afford to buy food or commodities. This, along with the poor infrastructure and security issues, has led to severe food shortages in parts of South Sudan. Onyoti says that instead of distributing tractors, the government needs to come up with a clear and comprehensive plan to deal with those shortages. He says tractors alone will not solve the problem. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
European Commissioner for Humanitarian Aid and Crisis Management has asked the European authorities to release an additional $54 million for victims of the crisis in South Sudan. Christos Stylianides also is calling on the warring sides in South Sudan to stop fighting and allow humanitarian aid workers unimpeded access to people who need assistance in the country. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Commissioner Stylianides announced the new funding proposal on Saturday at the end of a three-day visit to South Sudan.
Today, I have proposed to increase the EU humanitarian funding for the South Sudan crisis by a further $54 million. $38 million of it will be dedicated to the humanitarian response inside the country and $16 million for the South Sudanese refugees in the region. It will not be enough to cover all the needs of the population. I recognize it. But I, together with the UN, will try and drum up more support for the South Sudanese in June.
During the last 1 year, the international community spent $1.9 billion for humanitarian operations inside South Sudan and more than $1 billion for peacekeeping operations in the country. The European Commission is the second biggest donor to South Sudan after the United States. Stylianides says he came to South Sudan to express European solidarity with the people of South Sudan, who he says are suffering because of the ongoing crisis. Stylianides visited Lare in Unity State and Bor in Jonglei State, as well as a UN camp in Juba where thousands of people are sheltering. Many of the displaced persons in the camp have been there since fighting first broke out in the capital in December 2013.
My visit, though short, has taken me to different parts of the country where I've seen firsthand the suffering of the people of South Sudan. People who are sick and those who have been chased from their homes. People who have lost their livelihoods and lack opportunity to earn a living. I have met civilians who no longer enjoy the dignity that comes with self-reliance.
During the visit, Stylianides says he also met representatives of the government and the armed opposition. He called on both sides to ensure that humanitarian aid workers have safe access to the millions of South Sudanese in need.
With so many people suffering, the humanitarian relief agencies should be allowed to carry out their work without obstacles. We urge all parties to the conflict to not impede or obstruct humanitarian assistance.
Last week, UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, Toby Lanza, announced that aid agencies have pulled out of a town in Upper Nile State because of insecurity. Aid workers have been killed and harassed during the 16-month conflict in South Sudan, which has claimed at least 10,000 lives. Stylianides says that if the warring sides fail to reach a deal at the slow-moving peace talks that have been ongoing since January last year, many more South Sudanese lives will be lost.
War is no solution. The humanitarian situation is getting worse day by day, and the only way out is a political solution to the crisis. There can be no development without peace. What South Sudan is facing today is unsustainable. With statehood comes responsibility. The government has the duty of care to its people. I urge the leaders of this country to work together again for the sake of the future of this nation.
He says South Sudan has the natural and human resources needed to grow the young country's economy and make it a success. He urged South Sudan's leaders to move quickly to end the conflict and invest in the country's future. The funding request is widely expected to be approved. It will bring the European Commission's humanitarian aid for South Sudan and neighboring countries to just over 120 million euros for this year. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Lawmakers in northern Bahr al-Ghazal State Assembly suspended the body's chief whip because of his affiliation with former caretaker governor. Wotmal Girjoak is accused of abandoning his job for 3 months without authorization from the speaker. As we hear from Abraham Agod in Awil, Wotmal says he has no intention of quitting, saying the move was illegal.
Northern Bahr al-Ghazal state lawmakers succeeded in removing former caretaker governor Kwila Gwirkwil from office, but it remains to be seen whether his close ally, Chief Whip Wotmala Girjoak, will be able to hold on to his job. In a vote of 34 to 49 late last week, lawmakers moved to suspend Girjoak, saying those aligned with Aguirre are working against the ruling party's rules and regulations. In the resolution, the State Assembly recommended its deputy Deng Wach be acting whip until further notice. Assembly spokesperson Achak Thiep Thiep says the Assembly sent a letter to the SPLM ruling party requesting its endorsement of the action.
Chief whip in our Assembly or in the state, because he has abandoned his function and activities. Since he was standing against the decision of the SPLM members, and he, the government chief, will be supposed to be the one leading and convincing the members to support the SPLM motions. So government chief was appellated to former expel in PG caretaker governor. He was appellated to him.
Thiep says instead of doing his job, Girjoak followed the caretaker governor to Juba.
Government chief was appellated to former expel in PG caretaker governor. That was one charge. The second charge is he mislead some SPLM members against their party resolution and decision. That is number two. Three, condemning the resolution of the assembly for the impeachment of the caretaker governor. So he's not supposed to condemn the resolution while he's a member of the SPLM, and the majority of the members, 34 members, are all SPLM members.
Wotmala says the allegations are baseless and insists he is still the legitimate government chief whip of the state. Wotmala says he was appointed by the caretaker governor by degree, and if need be, he will be relieved by the same caretaker governor by another degree, not by the MPs. He says they don't have right to take such action. For VOA News, I'm Abraham Goth reporting in Awil.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials look at ways to combat the spread of malaria across South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
On Thursday, April 30th, VOA hosts a town hall-style meeting to discuss the South Sudan peace process. Moderator John Tanza and VOA's panel of guests will discuss what has been the role of the media, the involvement of the international community, how the peace process was conducted, and has it been inclusive enough? Join us for this event live on April 30th from 1800 to 1930 UTC by visiting voanews.com/South Sudan and clicking on the live web link. We welcome your participation with comments and questions. Email us at southsudan@voanews.com or you can tweet at VOA South Sudan. What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can the government do to help people who do not have enough food?
I think what the government can do is create more jobs, especially for the youth, because many of the people graduate and they end up not getting jobs. And that definitely will bring about not enough food for the people.
I think that the government should try very much to maybe get land, grow a lot of food, and then supply it to those who don't have food, rather than bringing it in from outside countries, because I think that even costs more.
Maybe they can help the farmers in the villages. They subsidize their businesses, they give them more money, and they help the farmers basically to produce more products.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Last Saturday was World Malaria Day, but in South Sudan, health officials often spend the entire month coming up with ways to reduce the deadly yet preventable disease. The World Health Organization says some 3.2 million people, almost half of the world's population, are at risk of malaria. Health officials in Juba say more than half of the city's hospital and clinic visits are due to malaria. Mungume Debs Rakarinch has more for VOA from Juba.
In Ward 4 of Juba Teaching Hospital, 25-year-old Vivian Power is writhing in pain. Her arms flail in the air, but she doesn't cry out. Her eyes are bloodshot and her lips are swollen. The mother of two is fighting for her life. Dr. Elijah Malukruweth, the head of internal medicine at Juba Teaching Hospital, says Power was in even worse condition when she arrived about a week ago.
She came with very severe malaria, with psychosis, psychiatric manifestations. This lady, some 5 days ago, and even tremors. You can see this patient now. She was suffering from severe malaria together with enterica. She has now developed signs of anemia. This is angulostomatitis.
Angulostomatitis is the inflammation of the corners of the mouth associated with wrinkled or cracked membranes. Dr. Maluk says Power is a fighter, but she may not have enough blood left in her body to survive. Severe cases of malaria are seen frequently in Juba Teaching Hospital. In fact, people living in the world's poorest countries like South Sudan are the most vulnerable to malaria. According to WHO, there are 198 million malaria cases worldwide each year, leading to an estimated 584,000 malaria deaths. 90% of those cases occur in Africa. Children and mothers are the ones most often affected. Dr. Maluk says about 70% of the patients who arrive at the hospital seeking treatment are diagnosed with malaria, especially during the rainy season. He says that is because
the grass grows everywhere and the water stagnates and the mosquito multiply the Anopheles, which carries the parasite of the malaria, will increase in number.
Dr. Maluk says the high number of cases in South Sudan could be cut dramatically.
Many people, maybe they are not using good mosquito nets, good protection from malaria, from mosquitoes.
According to the Malaria Consortium, a global non-profit organization specializing in the prevention, control and treatment of malaria, the deadly disease is prevalent in 95% of South Sudan. Experts with the Malaria Consortium say it can have a devastating social and economic impact on South Sudanese communities. 21-year-old Betty Awati traveled with her mother all the way from Yei to care for her sister Vivian Power. Awati says Power used to run a small restaurant at the customs market in Juba, where she typically made a profit of about £150 per day and was the main breadwinner for her family of five as well as other relatives.
Then she will do the job from here, and then she will send the money maybe to my mom. And my mom, she's not working also. She just sits at home. When this sister of ours gets money, some money, just she will send it.
But now, Power lies in hospital, completely helpless. Fortunately, her family does not have to pay for her medical treatment at Juba Teaching Hospital. But still, Awate says there are other expenses.
There's a lot of things we need to buy, like a water, like a food. But that is the problem, like the mango juice, even there's a lot of things.
Awate says so far, they have had to pay at least £100 per day for her sister's upkeep in the hospital. She says eventually they will have to transport Power to the village in Yei, a town with very limited medical services, because they cannot afford to keep coming to Juba. Awade says at times, Power's children have also contracted the disease. According to WHO, every minute a child dies from malaria. Worldwide, malaria costs $12 billion a year in direct losses. At the same time, the WHO says increased malaria prevention and control measures have dramatically reduced the burden of malaria in many places. Since the year 2000, malaria mortality rates have fallen 47% thanks to, in large part, to early detection and treatment. But Dr. Malut says the battle against malaria still looms large in South Sudan.
The general population, they have poor information about malaria, the transmission of malaria, and how they can protect themselves against malaria. They need to be taught how malaria is transmitted. They need to be taught how to strictly use mosquito nets. And again, when they get symptoms of malaria like fever, headache, and body pains, they should run before they go to third stage. They go to the nearest place where the diagnosis and the peaking of malaria is possible, and they will be given drugs.
In 2013, WHO said only about half of the population at risk in Africa had access to bed nets. Dr. Malut says people should also use mosquito repellents before going to sleep. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Computer science students at Juba University are developing phone applications that are designed to make it easier and faster to share information with smartphone. Jacob Achek sent this report from Juba, but not with a smartphone.
The applications were created and developed by Porto 3 students with support from the United Nations Educational Organization, UNESCO, and Zen Telecommunication. The course is part of a global initiative launched by UNESCO to help young people develop mobile applications that drive development and improve information sharing. Pitya David is a trainer from the College of Computer Science at Juba University.
We have a program that's known as Youths Mobile. It's an initiative of UNESCO. A Youth Mobile is a program that intends to train South Sudanese youths so that they will be able to develop mobile applications. Mobile applications are applications that can be installed in our phones, mainly smartphones, so that we can have locally produced applications to serve our local needs.
David says training session in app development began in August last year.
In this training, we help to develop the student capacity further so that they are able to build more applications. So far, in the intermediate training, the student managed to come up with six applications that were prototyped. We presented them during the closing ceremony of the training, and we tested the work very well, only that we need to take them further.
Taban Bosco is one of the participants in the Youth Mobile Initiative. He developed an application for first aid. He says altogether he and his fellow students have developed six different applications.
There's application for literacy, there's application for first aid, there's application for traffic lights, there's even application for peace message exchanger, or we can call it Risal al-Salam. Then there's also application of geographical location. For those who don't know South Sudan in general, they can use that application for them to locate all the 10 states in South Sudan.
24-year-old Emmanuel Lamoro developed an application for crop production. Lamoro says his application is aiming at helping farmers to get advice on cultivation from far away production centers. He says the mobile application will help to create jobs and generate money for South Sudan.
In the country, we see that if this initiative is extended to all the 10 states, it will reduce the rate of reliance, because most of youth, they don't know what to do, and others are crying of no jobs, there's no money. This application also, on the other hand, will generate money for the youth and will keep youths busy. In fact, different applications solve the problem of the country, not only in crop production area, but in different areas, so that make youths committed, and then they will be thinking of what to do actually for the country.
David says Zen Telecommunication is trying to get U.S. internet giant Google to recognize South Sudan application developers. He wants South Sudanese developers to be able to force their application on Google for smartphone users around the world to download. David says South Sudanese smartphone users can already download the applications. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
On Thursday, April 30th, VOA hosts a town hall-style meeting to discuss the South Sudan peace process. Moderator John Tanza and VOA's panel of guests will discuss what has been the role of the media, the involvement of the international community, how the peace process was conducted, and has it been inclusive enough? Join us for this event live on April 30th from 1800 to 1930 UTC, by visiting voanews.com/South Sudan and clicking on the live web link. We welcome your participation with comments and questions. Email us at southsudan@voanews.com or you can tweet at VOA South Sudan.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a song, Mudida, by by Congolese music star Wera Son.
Number one, le grand businessman, la référence de Kampala, c'est Vito Lukaya.
We have been listening to Wera Son with the song Mudinda. My name is John Tanza, and thanks for listening. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Catastrophe materielle. Véronique Cachala, le manager.